Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Chris Ronji, Amy Mark Scores with you on a Monday. And joining us now, as he does and will continue to do
until he's tired of our crap.
He gets sick of it.
He might.
Is Chris Ciliza, political commentator and author of the daily newsletter, So What? Chris, it's good to talk to you today.
Hey, guys, I've been meaning to talk to you about something. This is awkward.
It's just not working out. No, you know what you do? It's 2025, Chris. You know what you do? You just stop responding. That's what people do now.
They ghost.
They don't say,
True.
They don't say, hey, this isn't working out.
I thought you were going to say slap a tariff on it, like every time we talk to you.
Okay.
I will embarrass my older son that like a couple years ago, I found out that he had a girlfriend after they had already broken up. So I was like, okay.
And you're telling us the news?
Exactly. It's a little worrisome.
You know, you are. I think you're Jason Bateman from Arrested Development.
Oh my gosh.
His kid's dating yeah. Michael Cera.
Yeah.
His character's dating Anne.
Of course.
And he's like, who's that again?
Yeah. I think it would be great to have like a breaking news newsletter that is just the headlines from a month ago, and you're just like, I don't know if anybody saw this. You're just a little bit behind.
I will note this, like I think of this all the time. There's as it relates to Donald Trump, and I think this is probably an okay place to kick off our conversation, honestly. So there's an episode of The Simpsons, the cartoon that's been on Fox for a million years, and Mr. Burns is the kind of like curmudgeonly billionaire. He's very sickly. He goes to the doctor one time, and the doctor comes back and he says, Mr. Burns is like, oh, I guess I got a good report. And the doctor says, no, actually, you have every disease known to man and a few that we've just discovered in you, but you're not sick because of Three Stooges syndrome, which is they all are stuck at the door of your body and none of them can get through. And I do think there is an element of like Three Stooges syndrome with Trump, which is he is saying and doing so much that it's just really, really hard for any one thing to break through. And I do, by the way, think that is strategic and purposeful on their part, but it absolutely is effective.
So politically, how is this going to play for him? The tariffs are set to take, they're supposed to take effect tomorrow, but he has reached a deal with Mexico to delay those tariffs, but those with Canada and China are supposed to happen tomorrow. In terms of politics and in Washington, how do you think this is going to end up playing?
Well, I always say that the truth of the matter is that there's no way that the average person in America knows, number one, what a tariff is, and B, what a tariff's impact would be on their life. It effectively will raise prices, right? The prices will be raised on companies in America, and they will pass those prices on to the consumer. I don't think people really know that at this point. And candidly, guess what people don't like, no matter who is president? Passing along costs, paying more for everyday things. It's one of the reasons that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris lost. So, you know, I think that Donald Trump's best use of tariffs is as a negotiation tool. The Mexico result, 10,000 troops, Mexican troops being surged to the border, that's a good result for him because he does not have to impose tariffs on Mexico, which would raise prices in this country. And he can say, see, we got something that we want. The issue is if a country is not willing to play ball, then the tariff goes into effect. And then I think that hurts. Yes, a tariff against Chinese goods would hurt China, but it would also hurt the United States. I mean, make no mistake about it. And so I think he wants to use this as a good negotiation tactic. The problem is in any negotiation, there are at least two parties involved. And if one of them isn't on board with, oh, okay, we're going to cut a deal, it could be problematic for him politically.
Yeah. And you talked about just like how tariffs work. And I think, you know, I don't know what the average American knows about tariffs or knows that it's the American businesses that pay the tariff. It's the American individuals, because it sounds like Mexico's paying the tariff, but that's not who pays it. It's the American businesses and the American individuals, and then they can and probably will pass that cost on along to the consumer to make up for that loss. It's basically to discourage, right, Americans working with those companies or countries and not staying within the country itself.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think in an ideal world, what it does is it says we need to, for example, build and make more things in America. And Donald Trump said on the campaign trail, look, we're going to put these tariffs in place, and then all these companies are going to move from out of the country into the United States. You know, that was always far-fetched, right? The practical everyday impact of a tariff is the things that you buy, particularly when we're talking about our three biggest trading partners, right? China, Mexico, and Canada. The things that you buy, if these tariffs go into effect, which is an if they go into effect, is it will cost you more to do these things. It's just a fact. If Joe Biden was president and he put these tariffs in, if Barack Obama was president, if George W. Bush, and yes, if Donald Trump, it's just we've never seen the threat of these sort of broad-based tariffs outside of sort of a crisis moment, a war, something like that, where it's like, okay, well, we need to build our manufacturing sector. We need to put policies in place that force people to build in America because we're at war or we're in a crisis. That's not where we are currently, and that's why I think people don't. I just don't think. I looked at Google search data just before I came on here. If anyone can do this, but if you go to Google Trends type in tariff, the what is a tariff search has gone up about 2,500% in the last 24 hours.
Wow.
Well, because most people haven't talked about it since Smoot Hawley in sixth grade, or when they watched Ferris Bueller, which also talked about Smoot Hawley.
Exactly. That's where I learned about it.
So Chris Saliza, political commentator, is with us every Monday at 11 o'clock. His daily newsletter is called So What? You can see him on YouTube. You have seen him on CNN with The Washington Post. Right now, the Democratic Party seems to be a bit of a mess, Chris. Clearly, they did not do well in November. They are not in control of just about anything in Washington as we speak right now. Does it appear to you they have a direction? Because it does not appear they're unified on one.
No, they do not. I would note it was not a big news story, but they did choose a new leader over the weekend near Washington in Maryland, but very close to D.C., named Ken Martin, who has been the longtime chairman of the Minnesota Democratic Party. He won over the guy who had been the Wisconsin Party chairman. So I listened. The guy who won's name is Ken Martin. Now, I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about him, if I'm being honest, but I listened to sort of what he said in the wake of his victory. And if I was a Democrat focused on winning back the White House in 2028, it would worry me, because what he said is, we are going to go lower. I'm paraphrasing, but only by very little, that we need to get in the mud with Donald Trump. The reason that Democrats lost was not for brand issues or any issues with message. It was just that we didn't match Donald Trump's willingness to sort of define downward what people want in politics. I have seen person after person, Republican and Democrat, in the last decade say, here's all we need to do. We just need to out-Trump Trump. It never has worked, which I guess doesn't mean it could never work, but I will tell you it has never worked, because Donald Trump is held to a different and lower standard by the public than anyone else in politics. And so I that would worry me if I was a Democrat, because I don't think the solution is to be more like Trump in order to win elections. But I do think you're right that there is I think they are stunned. I think Donald Trump, not only winning the election, but then what he's done since he's come into office, you know, it's been 2 weeks as of today. I think it has stunned them. I think it has put them on the back foot. I don't think they know how to react.
Chris, there's a really interesting piece in The Atlantic a month or two ago by David Brooks, How the Ivy Leagues Broke America. And it talks about that shift from the Democratic Party, from being the party of the working class, to being the party of the academic elite. And I know the Smirkonish podcast talked about how And I am forgetting the guy who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas, how he said he knew Democrats were going to lose when he walked into an art museum and it was all about settler colonialism. And yep. David Brooks points out that this move to this highly educated elite Democratic Party and why we're seeing a rise in populism in, you know, in countries in Europe as well as in the United States is that these leaders, like these populist leaders like Trump, understand that, and he says this, that working class people resent the know-it-all professional class with their fancy degrees more than they do billionaire real estate managers or rich entrepreneurs. So even though Trump is an elite, he's a different kind of elite than what David Brooks calls the know-it-all class.
Absolutely. I think that nails it. It is amazing to me. I'm now old enough. I'm almost 50. I'm old enough to remember when Democrats were sort of the party of the little guy. You know, and that is totally flip-flopped where Republicans have become that. And I do think, look, I think there was a rise in the idea, and it still permeates in plenty of liberal circles, this idea that if only you read as much as we did, if only you were as smart as we were, you would agree with us, too. The reason that you don't agree with us is because you're ill-informed or dumb. Well, guess what? Like, that's not really a winning message. I mean, I don't think you have to be a political scientist to say calling people dumb is a problem. And I do think, for me, I think Democrats need to go out into the middle of America, hold a bunch of listening sessions with people, Democratic elected officials who have been elected in rural areas, and just listen and say, look, we understand you don't like what we're doing right now, but we can have solutions that you do like, and we want to hear from you and then start to build from there. This idea that they're going to build by kind of walling themselves off on platforms like Blue Sky, or they're going to turn off all TV except for MSNBC, I just think that's a gigantic mistake. That's how they got into this situation where the Democratic brand is so badly damaged.
There's this thought process, though, that at least this is how I think they look at it, that if they don't embrace the people more so on the left, they're not going to motivate those people to come out and vote for them. And if they don't get them to come out and vote, they're not going to win. Is that
absolutely?
So is that a problem for them?
You know, I think so. What's hard is when you don't have a sort of leader, you don't have a person who's kind of steering the ship, and everyone recognizes that person is steering the ship, even if they don't agree with it, maybe every turn the person takes, it's hard because there's a lot of voices saying a lot of different things. Look, Barack Obama, he slaughtered some sacred cows within the Democratic Party, but the left was willing to accept it because overall they believed him to be for them, right? And Hillary Clinton did less of a good job of that. Joe Biden did less of a good job of that. Kamala Harris did less of a good job of that. It's hard, but it's usually around a single person because you're right. Without the Democratic base, Democrats aren't going to win any elections. At the same time, with only the Democratic base, Democrats aren't going to win any elections. I mean, so that's the issue I find. It's like you can't really have one without the other, but a lot of it has to do with a person who people sort of trust to look out for their best interest. It's hard when it's just kind of the party speaking as like the Borg about like what we're going to do, because there just isn't a singular or even a handful of voices right now. Like if I said, name the leader of the Democratic Party right now, we'd probably come up with 8 to 10 different answers. And that's an issue for them.
Chris Saliza, political commentator. His daily newsletter is called So What? It is, you can catch him on YouTube as well. Like I said before, you've seen him on CNN. He's been with the Washington Post. He's been all over, and he's with us every Monday at 11 o'clock. You can also follow him on Twitter at Chris Saliza. Chris, thank you again. We will talk to you next Monday.
Next Monday. Can't wait. Thank you all.
Unless you ghost us.
Unless you change your mind.
I will be here.
Yeah.
I will be here and ready.
All right. Perfect.
All right.
Thank you, Chris.
Take care, all.
Okay. That Chris Saliza with us. Again, the daily newsletter is called So What? That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji on KMOX.